WMCHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast for CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston and some of the best co-hosts and fascinating topics of consciousness available. Shift Happens with Chandler David Watson, Tracy McBurney's Incredible Energy Consciousness, Mikhail Mir's Financial Consciousness, and nuclear physicist Thomas Campbell with Quantum Physics and Consciousness. It's an incredible mix of the best teachers on consciousness on every show. Call Intuitive Soul and Friends now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Believe. Hey, good afternoon. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. My guest has just entered the door, so we'll let him get his bearings before we make him answer. But it is the third Monday, which means we have David Watson here today, and we're going to be talking about self-forgiveness as one of the first steps towards healing. And I thought it was a good topic for, you know, the holiday season and apparently the hecticness of driving during the holiday season, trying to get to places we need to get to during the holiday.
I forgave myself already.
Oh, good, good, good.
I turned down the wrong street, it seemed. Nothing like following a snowplow down a...
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes the difference, yes.
Those two.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, let's talk about self-forgiveness. It's a good topic.
I think so. I just think a little mic adjustment. Mm-hmm. Here we are. Well, I've recently had a discussion with a few of my clients about self-forgiveness, because it seems the thing that we have the greatest amount of difficulty doing is doing just that.
Yeah.
You know, on our road to growth, personal awareness.
Right.
We like to forgive other people. That's what it says, you know, and
Absolutely. All
the texts that we read. But somehow we always seem to leave ourselves out of the picture, out of the formula.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most healing things I think I've ever done for myself is forgive myself for some of the transgressions that I've committed over my lifetime.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be anything particularly odious. Yeah. It just has to be something that we just aren't patient enough with ourselves for. And I think it has to do with self-patience. And most forgiving ourselves doesn't have to do with big stuff. It has to do with little stuff. Like losing our temper or standing in line at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Or getting cut off by somebody on the road and then having this mad desire to rush up to them and force them to the side of the road. And while we feel that sometimes, people do it.
Yeah.
But even after the moment it happens, for myself in the past, not that I ever did that, but for myself when I did have those momentary lapses, those jumps of emotional attacks from my negative emotional body.
Your ego deciding what was right and what was
right.
Wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. But the fact is, at the end of the day, with that kind of thing, we don't forgive ourselves, and we build up these things. And then not only do we not begin to forgive ourselves, we become more unforgiving of other people. And then we begin to gloss it over because we're not doing it for ourselves. We become hardened to it. And as a result, it no longer has a place in the world or our world on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to talk about this today.
Well, forgiveness is such a big piece. And,
yeah.
You know, it's funny because there's lots of times, and I discovered this in the summer, where, you know, there's lots of times where we think we've forgiven someone. We may have forgiven them with our heads. We can even have forgiven them with our hearts. But sometimes it's our gut brain that digest, you know, the betrayal, or digest, you know, the stuff that's happened that doesn't always ground right all the way down, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's just such a big piece, and I don't think people realize how much we judge ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're our worst critic.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to, you know, self-forgiveness, I mean, that's a huge piece because
Well, you know, one of the things I have clients say to me is, well, it's all fine and dandy, Dave. I mean, you know, I like the idea that I can, I'm supposed to do this. I really understand it intellectually. But like you were just saying, the emotional aspect of it is, but I still, you know, think that I'm a bit of an a-hole for doing this or that or the other thing. And, you know, you sort of, we jump on ourselves for that. And I think at the end of the day, it's a matter of beginning to understand our self-talk. And I say to people, if you talk to other people, even for 5 minutes in a day, the way that you talk to yourself, perhaps.
You wouldn't have many people to talk to.
you may as well be living on Gilligan's Island without the cast and crew, you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we put ourselves, if we did that outside of ourselves. Yet we continually attempt to keep ourselves in line and try to keep ourselves under control of this imaginary set of standards that we create for ourselves. And as a result, you know, how can we ever reach that bar? But yet, I say to somebody, well, I understand that, because we all have that drive to succeed and be as perfect as we can be in any given moment. But I would say perfection is the journey, really not the destiny. But in that we do that, if we had a good friend that was going through exactly what we were going through in that emotional moment, and we were standing there beside them, what would we be saying to them? Yeah. That's the question I ask people to ask themselves. Because you certainly wouldn't be calling yourself a putz or, you know, an idiot or dough or what did I do that again for or what's wrong with me or, you know, one of the million and one little things that we judge ourselves with on a moment-to-moment basis. Mm-hmm. And instead of judging, what we do is we begin to develop compassion.
Right.
Forgiveness. And by looking at ourselves as if we are that other person, then we can begin to get a keener idea of our foibles and our shortcomings as a human being and begin to actually celebrate that part of our lives so that we can feel more whole and less apart from the stuff that's happening around us. Because most of us take life as if it's just me. Right. You know, I would say we sing life in the key of me. And I've worked hard all my life to try and sing life in the key of we, you know. And when we break through into that larger way of thinking, then forgiveness becomes such an easy thing to do. You know, all of our biblical texts talk about forgiveness. All of the things that I've read from so many other philosophies around the world talk about forgiveness and you know, empathy and kindness and generosity and all of those things. But if we don't offer that to ourselves, we only become people paying lip service to other people with it because we don't really feel it. We say, well, I can feel it for somebody else, but if we can't appreciate it and feel it through ourselves, then I think we're missing the mark somewhere along the line. So that's where I say try and pretend you're your best friend. So whenever you're having a moment like that, just imagine your best friend come barking up to you going, oh, that guy just cut me off. And what would you say to your best friend? Eh, don't let it bother you. You know, please God he doesn't hit anybody else or he doesn't hit anybody or he gets home safe and everyone's... That's what you say to your best friend. But instead, inside, you wanna rip a strip off that guy or gal who just did that thing. So that's how to shift. Because the moment we start talking with compassion and love and forgiveness to ourselves, just automatically shifts our emotional body to a place where my latest favorite topic is benevolence. We step into a more benevolent, kinder, generous place in our hearts. Mm. And it is very seasonal for that because it seems that just around this time of the year, you know.
Yeah, we start having memories of all the things that, you know, the past. I mean, family is a good one for us because it was our initial growth period. So all of the things that we needed to learn, we usually got from our family. Mm-hmm. And they know all the trigger points. But that's our biggest, I mean, that can often show us our biggest growth in, you know, how we can relate with family.
Which brings us to the point where we have to say, well, why is it's this time of the year? No matter what part of the world you're in, we start feeling this way. And I came to the conclusion, I believe it has to do with the winter solstice. When you read the I Ching, for example, Chinese Book of Change, it talks about at this time of the year, in China, in ancient times, they closed all of the passes. Nobody went anywhere. It was the time, it was the lowest day, and it was the time of transition. 3 days before and 3 days after, that solstice, the shortest day of the year, people stayed home. And they reflected on what's been and what shall be. And then they set a plan, and then they moved toward that plan. And a lot of that had to do with staying home. So that's why the emperor actually closed the passes. No one could go through the mountains. No one could follow the roads. They had to stay home. And it was in that time that people had an opportunity to begin to practice that kind of reflection, come together with family and that sort of thing. So I think when it's darkest, we come together. So I think that may have something to do with it physiologically and energetically. That's just my theory.
Interesting. You know, it's a magical time.
Yes.
If we can get ourselves to that place of seeing the magic, if we can get ourselves to the place of, you know, thinking about giving and presence, presence, not the gifts, but presence of being, and, you know, really step into that place of compassion, which is really all around this time. And so it can be a very magical time. It's just we just need to be reminded to be now, to be here, to be present, to be...
Well, it's certainly a great time of the year to do it. I mean, traditionally we've created this time of the year, no matter what part of the world we come from.
That's true.
And no matter who our God is or isn't. The fact of the matter is that it seems to be this is the time for bringing this in. And that's why, you know, again, with forgiveness, compassion, benevolence, those are the kind of things, if we begin to practice as human beings, it's what really elevates us to another level of consciousness. You know, I've just been rereading David Hawkins' book, Power Versus Force. Well, before he passed away last year, he published a brand new revised edition.
Oh, he did?
Oh, yeah. It's quite an eye-opener reading through it. For those of you out there who aren't familiar with it, write it down. It's a wonderful book.
I've got like five of his books.
But this is the quintessential classic.
It's
kind of like, you know, Meetings with Remarkable Men by Gurdjieff. You know, he wrote many other books, but that one just clarifies his philosophy and understanding of the potential in humans. But Power Versus Force, this it talks about different vibrational levels, and he actually suggests that we can go up levels of consciousness just by shifting how we perceive the world around us. Instead of seeing it with a hardened vision, we see it with a kind vision. Instead of seeing it with a violent vision, we see it with a loving vision. He even mentioned in this book, which is very interesting, I think he did in the original book as well, that there's a certain number of what he calls shock points that come from various experiences in our lives. And whenever we have these, it starts to put us into a negative emotional state. You know, and he had people analyze a number of drama programs on television, and he discovered that in a one-hour program, there were 132 average, some of them two, three times as much, but average, 132 of these shock points that come through us by the things that we're watching on TV and how they're affecting us and affecting our emotional bodies. That lowers our vibrational energy, depletes us of our energy, and puts us in a situation where we have that kind of judgmental, negative aspect perspective on life. What I like to call the indignant victim approach to life, which we've discussed before, but I think that's the way to kind of look at it. And that's where the self-criticism comes in, the self-judgment, and of course, the judgment of others, because we love to judge others as well, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody trips over their shoelaces in the media, the next thing you know, everyone's up there, they got their opinion, and they're doing this and saying that, and, you know, but all we're expressing is our opinions. It's not truths. It's our opinions, our vision about what somebody else is doing. And we love to talk about somebody else, because the more we talk about somebody else and what they're doing wrong, the less we have to look at our own picture, at our own photograph of who we really are and the things we got to work on.
Right.
You know.
All right. Well, that's good for our first break. Lots of information there. We also have the phone lines open, and we have a couple callers. So,
oh, great.
Oh, yay. if you want to talk to the Willows, David is a deep trance channel for the Willows. You can call us at 248-545-SOUL. That's 248-545-7685. Or come in instant feedback, but just be really, really clear about what it is that you're wanting. No general type questions. And you're listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Enlighten. Empower. Enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons. No boundaries. Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. I have David Watson with me. David can be found on the web at askthewillows.com. The Willows are his soul group that he channels with. We will be bringing the Willows on, I think, in this period. But
oh, sure, we can.
We did get a caller.
So well planned.
Yes, we did get a caller who has hung up, but it was an appropriate all-around self-forgiveness. And Alex, if you're listening, you wanted to know if there was a meditation, and David had a brilliant idea.
Well,
everybody sort of has heard the Serenity Prayer, but
Well, that's exactly what came to mind as soon as I read the posting there.
Right.
I thought to myself, you know, people want to know a meditation for self-forgiveness. And the Serenity Prayer, which I think has been used by a number of 12-step programs over the last 100 years, is a wonderful one. And it just basically goes this way. You can use God, you can use Creator, or you can just leave that off and just say, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's a wonderful meditation. You're asking for surrender, right, to serenity. And I think it's serenity that is the very base of having that wonderful sense of balance and being grounded within ourselves. So for self-forgiveness, that's what I would suggest.
Yeah, and, you know, just, I think if you just see things from different perspectives, we get so caught up in, you know, the story of what we think or what we expect is happening. And, you know, it's a fascinating process when you can say, okay, well, what if that wasn't the story? What if, you know, this is a whole new opportunity for me? Like, just, you know, don't get caught up in something that is, that we've created because of challenges in the past. It's all past related. It never has to do with, you know, what we're doing now. So it's like, get out of your head, you know, move into your heart and you know, see things from a different place. Create a new story.
That's right. I think that's a wonderful way to do it, because so many of us do live in the past. My favorite metaphor is, you know, the only time you really use your back mirror is when you're backing, or your rear view mirror is when you're backing up. You know, if you use it when you're driving forward, you're sure to have an accident before you can turn the next corner. and it's so true, you know. But talking about that too, you know, one of my favorite quotes comes from Lao Tzu, a famous Taoist sage. And he says, if you're depressed, you're living in the past. Right. If you're anxious, you're living in the future.
Right.
If you're at peace, you're living in the now, or you're living in the Tao. And you know, I, you know, as a psychotherapist myself, amongst other things that I do, but I think that's a brilliant thumbnail sketch of how to describe our different states. So, you know, if you're feeling depressed and you're feeling down, it means you're living in the past. And of course, the past is past. The only time you can live is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you say right now, it's still right now, but it's in the past, the right now you just said. And did you know how you said it exactly? What was the intonation in the voice? You know, what was the implication? What, you know, we have lousy memories, by the way. You know, we're shown that within 20 seconds, our conscious mind has distorted, deleted, and generalized anything and everything around us to like store this sort of semi-jagged up kind of concept of flow and reality that we seem to believe is real, you know. And we sort of like in each moment we're creating the moment by saying, okay, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. But what we're doing is seeing the future coming through us, looking at the past and forgetting what's happening in that moment of perception.
Right.
You know? So I think that goes a long way to finding that sense of peace within ourselves.
Absolutely.
By just thinking about that kind of process and letting go of the need to live in the past. Because the past isn't really what happened. It's how you remember it, you know. And for those of us who remember things as children and we discuss them with our parents, it's amazing how differences of opinion occur about
everything
that ever happened. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's that, you know, that theory that if 100 people see an accident, there's 100 different perceptions of that accident.
Yeah. But only one accident.
Yes.
Obviously, if 100 people see a mouse, there's 100 different opinions about that mouse, and the mouse is still a mouse, you know? And breakfast to most cats. So
yeah. As one is curling up in your coat because you left it on a chair.
Well, there we go.
All right. Well, do you want to take the caller? Do you want to go into trance, or do you?
Would you suggest I go into trance with the caller? Well, I can do that. Sure. Go into trance with the
caller. All right. So if you want to get Jill on the line, we'll just wait for David to go on trance.
Yes, we are here now.
And balance the form.
Yes, yes, one moment. Yes, this is in effect with the agreement of the entity, David. You may now proceed as you
Perfect.
Wish.
Hi, Jill.
Hi.
You call us a lot, so tell us what's going on now, and you're wanting to know if you're in the right direction. That sounds exciting. So some things have been changing for you.
Yeah, I just wonder if he has a message for me.
Well, we provide information rather
based on your question.
Than advice. For advice is things that can change with a moment. But what we would say to you at this moment in time is for you to begin to look at the things in your life where, or the places in your life where you have felt out of control in the past. And by looking at the things that you were out of control in the past with, you may look at them and determine that if, and say to yourself, if I was out of control, or I felt I was out of control, that means that I have certain beliefs about what I needed to do to stay in control. And it's very important to understand the nature of control. Whether you are in or out of control, you are have very few choices. Because controls are things that are actually created to maintain or create a present state or a status quo, to give a false impression of things that are real and whole, even though they are only memories or thoughts. So this is what these are beliefs. And the beliefs are created to very specifically maintain the status quo. So if you feel you are out of control, it is because of one of your beliefs is being challenged, and you, because you had certain limitations you created to make that belief true in your life, now the button is being pushed. For example, you may say to yourself, I'm going to try and remain calm in everything that I do. Well, of course, the first time something comes up that pushes a button for you, you feel like you're out of control because you're not staying calm. Whereas, in fact, the fact of the matter is that you cannot stay calm all the time. What you can do, however, is look at your emotional body and begin to flow with it. So when an emotional upset occurs, instead of feeling like you are being overwhelmed or washed out to sea by it, instead you ride the wave and do not hold on to the emotional state, thereby releasing yourself from the sense of being stuck in the moment. In doing this, you are taking charge of yourself. And this is the most important thing, and we see you're doing this a lot at this point in your life, which is why we're sharing this with you at this time. You are letting go of trying to control things, not that you're giving up, or not that you don't believe in controls, but the fact is you're taking charge of them. And by taking charge of the things in your life, it makes things flow a lot easier, does it not?
Yes.
And this is the philosophy to hold for yourself around this. Whenever you start to feel uptight from now on, stop for a moment. And this is in any situation, say, do I have a control issue here? And, of course, you'll always find one because every human being has thousands and thousands of controls and beliefs that surround their perspective on life. But whenever you feel out of control or emotionally distraught, look at the basis of this and look at the belief that's attached to this. And as you look to the belief, you can just simply say to yourself, oh, I forgot. I was in charge. And the moment you say that, even saying it to you now and you thinking about something like this allows the shoulders to drop a bit, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it gives you a sense of being in charge of your life. Because as you probably learned to this point in life, you cannot control anything in life. You can have a go at it, but ultimately you cannot, because especially other people, because everyone is going to do what they're going to do. But you can take charge of how you perceive things. You can't take charge of how you interact with the world around you. And that is the secret to joyful success. Is this helpful to you?
Yes, I'm writing it down.
Well, luckily you can listen to it again when you go to when it goes into archives, and it will be on David's page definitely by the end of the week, but probably earlier.
Yes.
Thank you. That was really helpful. Thank you so much.
Indeed. You're welcome.
Yes. All right. It was our pleasure and our honor.
Beautiful. So we're going to go to our next break. You're listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends. If you want more information about David or the Willows, go to the website askthewillows.com. We are listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Like what you're hearing? If you'd like to learn more, experience more, contact Lori Houston and Gene Adrian. With a bachelor's in social work and natural clairsentient abilities, Lori is an impressive and intuitive counselor. She's developed her own clearing and healing techniques to assist you to find a heart's way so that you may hear the gentle guidance of your soul and your soul's purpose. Visit on the web at intuitivesoul.com. Jean Adrian is a healer, teacher, lecturer, and creator of Quantum Change. She's developed and teaches the Inner Speak process. Working via phone as well as in her office in Atlanta, Georgia, Jean offers readings, coaching, and clearing sessions. Learn more online at jeanadrian.com. Take your business to the next level by talking with Voices of Soul about advertising opportunities. Voices of Soul, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Sky. CBS Radio's newskyradio.com. Now heard in Boston, Seattle, and Detroit in HD at AOL Radio and Yahoo Launchcast.
The Sky.
New horizons, no boundaries.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world. Closing time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time, one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I know.
Radio's The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends. We have David Watson with us. If you have any questions, you're looking for some guidance over the holidays, or you're wanting to know a little bit more about self-forgiveness, give us a call, 248-545-SOUL. That's 248-545-7685. You can come in on instant feedback. Just be really, really clear about what it is that you're wanting. So we're talking about self-forgiveness. We're talking about the energy of the holiday season, which kind of, I mean, if there's any time that we can kind of connect in with the magic of this time to reflect and to open ourselves, I mean, this is the time.
Well, I think so. This is what I was saying a little earlier, is I do believe it's that time of the year when, you know, traditionally, particularly in northern climes, people couldn't do anything at that time of the year. They'd had their harvest, the food was stashed away, they had their wood there, the animals were all kind of taken care of, and the snows were upon us and the weather was upon us. So it's the time we would get together and with the family and tell stories and make recollections and celebrate life, because the return of the light is quite something. And I've, for my adult life, I've had a real sense of the pulse of the earth in the changing of the seasons. It just amazes me, the changing of the seasons. I mean, one moment you're walking around in shirt sleeves, and the next minute you got a parka wrapped around you. You're scraping snow off of your windshield. So
yeah.
It's amazing.
Shoveling.
It's part of the world. That's right. You're shoveling something.
Shoveling a foot of snow that came down.
That's right.
In a 24-hour period.
Oh, my gosh. I was in a city called London, and a little west of Toronto, and there was this freak weather condition, 80 centimeters of snow, which is like almost 3 feet. Two and a half feet of snow just whacked down within a 24-hour period of time. And it was literally in about a 1 mile radius. It was a half a mile each way from where it seemed I was. I was right in the middle of it. And I'll tell you, I've never seen anything like that.
Wow.
But, you know, that's this time of year.
That's kind of exciting.
But that's the kind of thing that draws us together, I think. That, you know, I had readings set and that kind of thing. I was out of town for a specific reason. Of course, there was lots of cancellations, so it was a good time to – no one could get out of their house or down the street.
Wow.
So it sort of changes things, and you know, it's magnificent when the seasons can begin to take our lives, and we become shaped by them in that way. But as I'm always fast to say, shaped but not defined. But
right, yeah. Right. Wow. Yeah. It's interesting. And, you know, of course, they say there's no coincidence that Constantine had created Christmas around this season, because it's, you know, wanting to connect in with that holiday that was already there.
Well, yeah.
That is kind of an important one, because it's true. I mean, it is that, you know, the darkest day of the year, whether that means spiritually, not necessarily,
well,
but
length of time of night versus day. There's more night than day and that sort of thing. It's very fascinating to me. And I just find that so much of our beliefs have whirled around that. Like right now, for example, this year I believe they celebrated Hanukkah earlier.
Yeah,
because
November.
It's because of the phases of the moon. We have a full moon out there tonight.
Right.
You know? And
full
last
moon
night,
technically is tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Well, it sure looked pretty full last night. Mm-hmm. It was looming on the horizon like a giant, orb of golden orb, and it was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
But, you know, we feel that a lot. And I think this time of the year, we get that reflection, and that's part of the solstice as well. Because in the past, the solstice wasn't based so much on people were sitting there measuring how long a day was. They did it by the moons and the phases of the moon. Because, let's face it, how can you miss something like that in the sky every night, you know?
Right.
Sort of dominates the sky, the evening sky, you know? So, yeah. I think that that has something to do with the celebrations of this time of the year as well.
For sure.
I just want to go back to talking about a little more about this self-forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just wanted to just zoom in a little more on the process of resentment.
Mm.
Because, you know, it's resentment that really is the basis of most of our emotional distress. You know,
right.
And out of resentment comes blame, and releases us from the truth of taking the responsibility of our own lives onto ourselves. Not that we're responsible for things that happen to us, you know, But in that sense, well, unless, of course, we weren't looking the wrong way when we were crossing the road, or we had our iPad or our iPhones on when we were walking along the railroad track in the wrong direction, you know, perhaps. But, you know, for the most part, when things happen, as Freud used to say, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Things just happen. So we can't take that onto ourselves in that way. But the resentment that we feel where we blame people, say, well, you know, If you hadn't done this to me when I was a kid or when I was 18, my life would have gone in a different direction. If this hadn't happened, or if I'd have only had that break, or, you know, so we have that kind of a perspective on life. And a lot of us get into this resenting, blame, critical body of energy. And we all have a gestalt for that one, mm-hmm. you know, because let's face it, we're taught in our society to blame other people, you know. Well, you know, it's the government's fault that this happened, or it's this fault that happened, that. And so we look at cause and effect, right? So that's where blame comes from. But I think we leave out of the formula that we have the ability to make choices along the way, to choose how to feel. You know, if something happens that upsets my emotional body, I can do two things. I can either reach out and embrace it and hold on to it, which is kind of like holding onto reaching into a fire and grabbing a hot coal. Yeah, I think I'll just stick that in my pocket, you know. I don't want that in my pocket. It's much safer in the fire, you know. And it can burn me if I get too close, but what do I want to hold it for? And it's the same with that emotional body. If something becomes so overwhelming to me that I don't dissociate from it, I totally allow it to affect me. I allow that emotional wave to roll right over me, and I try to be fearless when that happens. And when that emotional wave hits me, then it passes because I didn't try to resist it. I didn't try to stop it from happening. Because a lot of, you know, something happens to us. We see something horrific happening. And the first thing we say is, no, 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 oh, no, oh, no, 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 in our minds, in our bodies. And we respond to it. And what I discovered from muscle testing is, yes, test strong, and no, always test weak. Which is very interesting for those of you who do kinesiology. I'm sure you probably can validate that 100%. So when we do our self-talk, when we do that blaming thing, when we do that, and or if we see something that happens that we don't know, except we always go, no.
Right.
You know. And have you ever noticed little kids, the first time you ask them to do anything, their first answer is, no. And how many times you talk to somebody, and as you're saying something, go, oh, yeah, I understand, but no, this is the way, you know, you sort of, well, hold on. What do you mean, no? But no is a word that has a very weakening effect on our energy fields as well. So when we use that self-language, it's another little hint there, no?
Right.
Think of better ways to say yes and less ways to say no.
Right. It just reminds me of Yes Man, the movie with Jim Carrey. It was a good movie.
Very good movie. He was compelled to say yes. But you know what? I think so many of us that lead our lives, you know, with this sort of secret inner life that we don't want other people to see. You know, it's where we get into the Privacy mm-hmm. Act and people invading our personal lives. And as David Hyatt Pierce said at one point, my life is an open book. I just prefer not to read it in public. And it's true, because any of us who put ourselves into the public, you know, forefront are open to, you know, acute inspection, microscopic. But at the end of the day, what do? We all pretty much the same. We all like to eat. We all like to sleep. We all like to make love if we have the opportunity. We all love to, tend to things that are beautiful to us. We love our families. We love our children. We love, you know, and we put things in. And that's what we want, you know. And when we look at the bigger picture, what does everybody in the world want? Well, they want their families to be safe. They want their children to have a future. They want to see them, you know, be happy and joyful in their life ahead. So those are the similarities that we hold. And when we hold those similarities and we begin to realize them, then we can begin to start appreciating other people's perspectives as well. Because at their very core, they're the same as us. They just look different or talk different or have an accent or wear funny clothes according to our beliefs. And according to their beliefs, we are the ones that are wearing the funny clothes, you know. But the fact of the matter is it's, I always say about life when it comes to that, I always say we have to look at similarities, okay? And we have to, you know, embrace similarities with each one of us, you know, and what our needs are. No matter what our, you know, our beliefs are about anything else, no matter what our sexual perspectives are, you know, none of that stuff. We have to just look at ourselves being people first. And when we do that, then, you know, we have a greater chance of accepting the world around us, accepting ourselves, you know, in a more loving and kind and non-judgmental way.
All right, we're going to go to our last break. You are listening to Intuitive Soul and Friends with David Watson. You want to know more about David or the Willows, go to their website, askthewillows.com. You are listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Seeking guidance in areas of love, career, and family? Kimmy Rose and Friends provides access to gifted psychics and is just a call away at 1-888-626-7386. Visit KimmyRose.com. That's Kimmy with an I-E. And click on the link to Kimmy Rose and Friends under Kimmy's picture on the right. Choose your advisor and click on their link below. If they're not immediately available, schedule an appointment with them. Kimmy Rose and Friends, connecting you with psychic advisors, Kimmy Trust.
The New Sky.
Back to Intuitive Soul and Friends with Lori Houston. Call Lori now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
And welcome back. This is Intuitive Soul and Friends, and I have David Watson with me. You can find out more about David if you go to his website, askthewillows.com. And we've been talking all about self-forgiveness and kind of the holiday season and how that sort of highlights and can assist us in, you know, really looking at...
Well, this is the time our stuff comes up, too,
yeah.
Doesn't it? I mean, you get together with people you don't see most of the rest of the year,
yep.
You know, siblings and parents and uncles and aunts and cousins and you name it, and people bringing new people in, or they're seeing new people over the last year, they've met new people. So you walk into this hodgepodge of energy, and, you know, all of the dynamics we had over our lifetimes come out into the forefront. And I've seen this happen where people who are in their 40s and 50s, you know, they get there to the house, and the next thing you know, it's like they're back when they're, like, they're teenagers. They'll be bickering back and forth and getting right back into old behavior patterns, because those are the things that we're most comfortable with, it seems to me. And you know, we fall into certain cadences and certain behaviors and that kind of thing. And then we get together with people we haven't seen for years, and suddenly it's like, yeah. So one of the things we can offer ourselves as a gift this Christmas is to be aware that we have, perhaps, well, maybe not you guys, but me, perhaps been practicing that to some degree or another. In other words, treating people by rote, treating people just by, you know, this old emotional stuff that we used to have and that we felt for each other, you know. So what I've done now is I've kind of like reassessed things. And what I did is I've created for myself something I call an open-ended judgment. Mm-hmm. And I use it in everything that I do in my life now. An open-ended judgment is, first of all, I don't like to be judgmental. And I realize that the reason I didn't like to be judgmental is because I was, you know. So I didn't want to be anymore. But I also realized that judgments, depending on how you want to define them, judgments are things that we need to help keep some kind of order in the world around us, to have an opinion. We meet somebody we have to have an opinion of and create an instant judgment of. The only thing is that we learn, if we don't learn leave it open-ended, the first judgment we create for somebody or something, we hold on to. Like, for example, you know, your daughter brings somebody home, some guy home, and you know, like, he may have a, you know, look a bit scruffy or have a tattoo or something on his arm, and you immediately zoom in on that, and you look at this person, and depending on what your belief system is and what your lifetime of perspective is, you form a judgment on this poor guy who's really, you know, you got to, A, believe that your daughter was smart enough to know she's not going to bring home somebody who's, like, not going to be fitting. And secondly, you know, it creates immediate resentment and dissension. There's a wedge that gets driven right in by creating those judgments. Because, you know, you might look 5 years from now, you know, you're still holding the same opinion, but they're married and got two kids, and you're saying, I never liked him. You know, meanwhile, the kids adore him and everybody else, you know. So it's like that, you know. So the open-end judgments is simply saying, I see somebody, I see a situation, I see it happening, and I go, oh, that's the way it is now. And since I know that things never remain the same, nothing is static, everything shifts, everything changes all the time, all the way. And I think it's that kind of idea, holding on to that ideal, that we can then say, well, since things do shift and since they do change, then if I see that guy again with a tattoo on his arm, I'm going to have a talk with him the next time. I'm going to talk about some of the stuff I'm interested in, because I was so, you know, frozen the last time I talked to him. I just, all I could look at was, you know, that big heart in his forearm, you know, or whatever, you know. And then you start talking, and then you find out, oh, well, I got the tattoo when I was a kid, you know, it was a stupid thing, you know, I was in school. And the next thing you know, you discover the guy's, you know, a wonderful human being, and that he has a wonderful philosophy on life. And just like you and everybody else, has stumbled over his feet a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an open-ended judgment. So that we give ourselves an opportunity to learn more. And sometimes we form a really good opinion of somebody, mm-hmm. and we realize all we bought was their persona and not their soul. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really the soul, as you call it, intuitive soul. Our souls do recognize each other, and they are intuitive with each other. And I think that once we open to that, you know, and then we can stop worrying about whether our judgments are right or wrong, and we keep all of our judgments open-ended. You know, so that way, you know, you're not buying somebody for a nickel or selling them for a dime. You know, you're just seeing them as people and circumstances, and everything changes. Everything changes. I met somebody I went to school with. When I met him, I didn't even recognize him. Hmm. You know, he was living this other life, you know, that was very interesting. He was his teacher, and he had a wife and some kids, but that sort of thing. But I'd had a certain vision of him, but I had a totally different perspective when I saw him again, like 40 years later. And, you know, I think those kind of things are part of our ability to open up to that understanding of judging.
Right.
You know, I think somebody a lot smarter than me wrote down on a piece of paper a long time ago, judge not lest ye be judged.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. You know, we have a lot of that stuff that comes to us from our Judeo-Christian tradition. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of Sufism lately. And this is very high, beautiful energy that comes from a high end of Islam. And the philosophies there are phenomenal. It's so beautiful. But it's similar things. You know, they talk right. about people who, how we judge things. And they talk about people who are blindfolded or the blind men, and they all touch an elephant. One touches the tusks, and another one touches the trunk, and another one touches the tail, and another one touches the body. And each one of them describes an animal that's totally different than the other people, because when right. they touch the trunk, oh, it's a giant snake. And they touch the body, it's always like a giant wall. And they touch the tail, oh, it's like a very thin, you know. And so each person has their own perception. And understanding the nature of our individual perception gives us an opportunity to be non-judgmental about others as well. So just my thought.
Yes. Well, David will be back with us on January 20th. I hope we'll have sort of a New Year's message of what's going to be happening. We like to do that in the beginning of January to...
predicaments. No, predictions.
Not That's necessarily it. Predictions. Just, yeah. You know, what's the energy of 2014 and what we're gonna see.
It's a goodie.
It's a goodie. I hope so. I'm thinking it is. Yeah. All right. Well, we always appreciate everyone for listening and for calling in and connecting with us. And, you know, have a fabulous holiday and New Year.
And may the New Year bring you all that you need.
Absolutely. All right. With that, if you want more information about David, check out his website, askthewillows.com. You are listening on Sky Radio, powered by CBS.